thank you for being here this evening. I'm excited to introduce our guest tonight. Moved over from Brazil in early 2000s to study film at the Vancouver Film School, and got his start as a trainee AD, working his way up on shows like Supernatural and Godzilla and Monster Truck, as a third and second and first AD, as a first AD on Riverdale. Last year he moved into directing, started up directing a couple episodes. He's now this season's producing director. I'm very excited to introduce Gabe Correa.
Thank you for coming, everybody.
All right, cool. So I've got notes on this. Don't think me rude, guys, for checking on this. So let's start with, let's start from the beginning. So you moved over and you went to Vancouver Film School.
Yep.
When you graduated and you were breaking into the industry, was directing always on the cards, or did you move in thinking you would explore that on set?
I always wanted to direct.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about film school for me is you go to film school when you do well in school, you get one of the directing assignments, or you're a quote-unquote good student,
sure.
And you think that, you know, as soon as you're out of film school, there'll be a chair with your name on it, and you're going to start directing and whatnot. And, you know, back then it was a little different because to make a short film wasn't as easy, right? This is still back with film, and so it's expensive. Even to do a little calling card short was, you know, it required a certain amount of resources and whatnot. So you think you're going to come out of it, and it's just, yeah, I want to be a director. This is the film school.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came out, and it took me maybe a year until I got together and became a PA and got into a real film set, you realize very quickly how you're not prepared to be a director in the real world, right? It's just, it's a rude awakening where it's like, wow, this is a machine, this is a beast, this is a serious job. But that being said, it never changed my mind that I wanted to be a director. It certainly felt that it was going to take a long time, and it did. But, you know, I just sort of took one day at a time, one lesson at a time. But in that path, there wasn't a point where it was like, oh, maybe I should just do props, or maybe I should be a DP, or maybe, you know, or maybe I'm going to be an editor. There was always, okay, just keep plugging away, just keep plugging away. And between film school and actual directing, I did two short films in between while, you know, slowly climbing through the AD ladder. But yeah, always the ultimate goal to direct.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So chat about the short films. Did you make those to sort of show producers you were working with, or to keep directing as you were building up, as you were moving up in the AD ranks?
The first short I did out of film school was called The Ambassador. That was 2008, I think. I was working on Supernatural as a third AD. And the idea to me with that was calling card short, do the festivals, maybe that would lead to some recognition in that circuit, and then maybe we can do a feature film out of that idea, or another future idea will come. And we shot during their last writer's strike, because Supernatural went down and nobody was working, so we were able to get good crew and gear that was just sitting around. It was an ambitious little short. And long is like 20 something minutes. I always think it's a terrible idea to do, like, don't ever do a 20 something minute short.
Take note.
But the idea was that, yeah, maybe if we do a kick ass short and get into some good festivals, and you know, then people start, you know, the classic, oh, great short, what do you want to do next? And that never happened.
It didn't. It's adapted to a feature.
Except it didn't make it to didn't make it to a single festival. And the ironic thing was that when I took that short and I showed to people in the business, I went to set and I showed to one of the producers of Supernatural. I would show to the DP or a guest director would come by that I had a relationship and say, hey, would you mind, I did this, give me some feedback, or some of the actors.
Yeah.
And people go, fuck, this short is really good. Like, you know, how long did it take you to shoot, or what was your budget? And like, well, we shot in like 2 days or 3 days for $2,000. And people like, oh my God, that's a great value. It's like, yeah, you know, we had a lot of help. It was a writer's strike. So the comments were very positive, and people were talking about the production value, how it looked like professional, and how the story was concise, and there was beginning, middle, end. Some shorts are really out there. But yet, in the world where shorts get some recognition, there was none. Like, it was a terrible short as far as, like, the life of a short. And no accolades. Yeah. But whenever I showed to people, they, in the business, they liked it. So to me, it was tough because you feel defeated because it's your baby. But on the other hand, you think, wow, you know, if I have all these people in the industry telling me that there's something good here, you know, just keep at it. So that was the idea with the short, and that didn't go anywhere. But I continue ADing, and the tough thing I think with shorts and ADing and all that is, it's such a consuming profession, you know. And being a third AD is awful. Like, you're first in, last out.
Yep.
On a series
for 10.
No time for anything else on a 10-month series. So it's that thing. If you work to have the money to do the short, you don't have the time to do the short. And then when you're in the hiatus and you have time to do the short, then you have absolutely no money. So it took me a long time. My second short was 2018, I think, through the Guild when they funded my second short. So quite a long time.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it went.
Because you had no time during that.
No time.
So during that time, so on Supernatural, you worked your way up from trainee to third to second to first.
Correct.
That was like a 10-year period.
11 seasons.
11 seasons, right. And, you know, was directing on the cards then at all?
It was not.
Yeah.
I know I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
The producers knew that ultimately that would be my goal, but it was never in the cards there, and that's part of the reason why I left. But there was no resentment with that. I mean, I was really young when I started. I was. It's funny because now I'm Riverdale. I look at the crew and I feel super old. I'm like, I'm not old, but I feel super old because it's such a young crew.
Yeah.
And in Supernatural, I was like one of the youngest people there. So there's a lot of crew members that got opportunity to direct, but they were there before me. And I thought, you know, it's never. Unless the show goes like 30 years, it's never going to be there for me, and I understand that. So at some point, I got to take that leap and go somewhere else. But they knew of my desire; they were supportive of, you know, chatting about what the job actually meant, or you know, how to, you know, get that job,
or advice
and all that. So there was support, but ultimately, listen. To go from trainee to first in the same show, yes, it took 11 years, so it didn't happen overnight. But to go from trainee to first in the same show with people you know and support you and want you to do well, it was already...
It's a huge...
I thought it was huge. Yeah. I thought it was like, listen, take the win, and it's not going to happen for you here, and that's fine, but you got to go somewhere. And when I talk to people that I trusted on Supernatural, say, listen, I have an offer to go AD for Riverdale. I'm nervous. It's only second season. It's their first 22-episode order. This is safe here. It's secure. I have two young kids and whatnot. And everybody said, you have to leave. There was not a single person that I trusted. Oh, maybe you should. Everybody said, you go and you don't look back.
Wow.
You reached your ceiling here.
Great advice.
Then you have to go. And I'm like, okay.
That's good advice. So you touched upon something there that I want to talk about now. When you were on Supernatural, you said, you know, you'd always made it clear to producers and decision makers and showrunners that, you know, this was where you wanted to go. So while that didn't lead to episodes there, you know, you got advice for that. So let's talk about that then. When you, I'm assuming when you jumped onto Riverdale, when you became first AD on Riverdale, it was again another decision you had with those decision makers, with the producers and showrunners that ultimately you would love to be considered for episodes. So let's talk about the beginning of Riverdale and how that led to those episodes.
So David McGee, who's a production manager in town, who I respect a lot, and he brought me on to Riverdale. And he said, listen, I'd love to have you. We did a show together, a Netflix show. And he said, I'd love to have you. It's nice over here, blah, blah, blah. But you got to meet Connie Dolphin, who's our mm-hmm. line producer, he had done season one, David, but Connie was coming in and she kept David as the production manager. Yeah. You got to meet Connie. And I'm like, okay, no problem. So right in that first interview, when I talked to Connie, we were talking about me, my style of A-Dean, mm-hmm. Supernatural, Riverdale, blah, blah, blah. And she said, why are you leaving?
Supernatural.
Yeah, why would you leave? Like, what do you want to, why do you want to come over to Riverdale? And I told her, like, you know, change is good, all that. And I said, listen, I'll be honest with you. My ultimate goal is to direct. Mm-hmm. But I'm also very careful because I don't want to be seen. I never wanted to be seen as the guy that's trying to back channel your way into directing by whether it's befriending the cast or doing, like, you know, it's just such a fine line mm-hmm. between letting Absolutely. Known that you want to be direct but not being people's face, like, when is my turn? I want to be a director. You know, because ultimately I was hired to be the first AD. And I thought the only path to become a director is to first be an outstanding first AD. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I told Connie, listen, my ultimate goal is to direct. And this is a young show, so I think this opportunity, it's more likely to happen here than one off. But I'm going to tell you, this will never influence the way I'm ADing. I'm here to be your first AD that comes first. But yes, ultimately, whether it's here or somewhere else, mm-hmm. I'll be directing one day.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be here. So right away I told her. But then day to day, it's not like I never mentioned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you let her know and then you just do your thing. And then there was an episode early on in season two. We had a director, which, not mention names, but that person had been out of the workforce for a long time.
Right.
And they came back to direct for the first time, and they were really nervous.
Yeah.
And I just helped this person along the best I could. You know, some advice here, never in front of the crew, you know, using the tact that you learn through the years about, you know, one director per picture, you know, just, hey, what if we do this? Mm-hmm. You know, like, we were in trouble, maybe you did this, maybe, like, you had a good idea. So I felt that I helped that person along. That person was losing the command of the set mm-hmm. and the crew and the actors because, you know, TV crews are like sharks. They smell blood. They go for it. Mm-hmm. The minute they feel somebody's not in control, they go for the jugular. And then I think when we were able to push that episode through the finish line, there was this perception that I really helped mm-hmm. that process along beyond what's just expected of a first AD. But with a little bit of a creative contribution. Yeah. And that started that conversation. You know, now not at the line producer level, but at the showrunner level in Los Angeles. When, listen, Roberto came to town, he did some of the table reads, like, listen, Gabe, I heard this was a rough one. Thank you for pushing it through. All the cast spoke highly of you, how you helped along. How when they were unsure, even the takes, they would come to me and say, hey, how did that go? I don't know.
Wow.
How do I feel about this take? Is this silly? Is this over the top? I'm like, no, it's good. I got your back and whatnot. So you build this bond and trust, a professional trust and bond, not like, oh, I'm friends with the cast, I want to be a director, but a true trust relationship on set. And that's sort of the second step. And then through that, I just sort of step by step, Let it happen. And the following season, it's when season three is when it happened. But it was known to everybody, but I didn't want to push it either.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to let it happen.
Makes sense. So yeah, you sort of let that known in first season. Mm-hmm. In second, you really stepped up and then got the attention of the showrunner mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. I think it's big for a showrunner as well, knowing that you have the trust of the cast
for sure.
as well, and 100%. They're coming to you for performance. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you directed then two episodes mm-hmm. of season three.
Correct.
And they must have loved those. And season four, you are now the producing director.
Yes.
Let's chat about that leap.
Well, the first leap was that I wasn't meant to direct two episodes.
Right.
I was given the one episode to do. And I did it, put everything I had into it. I went to LA to do my cut. And I turned the cut. And that same day, I turned my cut in like lunchtime. I drove to the airport, got on a plane, because the next day I was going to be prepping. as an AD.
Back to ADing the show.
Back to ADing the show. So I directed episode 15, and then they put me back into episode 18, the rotation. It worked out. So episode 18, I'll be ADing again.
Right.
And I already missed, I think, 1 or 2 days of prep by doing my cut. And they allow me to do it.
Yeah.
Because we used to get our scripts late all the time. So the first 2 days of prep was really nothing to do. So I got back in Vancouver, episode 18, and Brendan Uwegama was directing. He's a, for those who know him, he's a fantastic guy, and he's a DP here in town, who's now shooting in New York for Roberto's Katie Keene show at premiere last night.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan used to be the DP on Riverdale. He left to do a feature film, Child's Play, but he came back to direct one episode.
Oh, cool.
And so it was me and Brendan. So Brendan was going to direct it, and I was going to be his AD. I showed up in the office the next morning after turning my cut.
Mm-hmm.
And Connie's like, hey, welcome back, blah, blah, blah. How did it go? I was like, yeah, it was great, great. She's like, did you have your morning coffee yet? I'm like, no, should I? He's like, yeah, yeah. You want? Did Roberto and Michael talk to you about your cut? And I'm like,
oh, shit.
No. And now, like, it's just blood. It's drained. I'm like, I was like, I fucked this up, didn't I? And I felt like, how? I watched, like, listen, maybe they didn't like it, but, like, I'm not stupid. I watched that cut. It was decent. Yeah. You know, there's no glaring mistake. It's like, yeah, why don't you, listen, grab a coffee and just come. You know, we need to check. Come to my room. And I was like, fuck, you know, what is this? So I go to her office. She closed the door. It's like, listen, something's going down. Katie Keene, the pilot, shoots in whatever, 2 weeks. Roberto has tapped Maggie Kiley to be the director. She had directed a couple episodes of Riverdale. I AD for her. She's fantastic. And she said, Maggie wants Brendan to shoot the pilot. So Brendan's leaving today to go to New York. So we don't have a director. I'm like, oh, okay. And she said, and Roberto and Michael said that they were going to look at your cut. That's why I asked. They're going to look at your cut because they need to find somebody to do it. And you know, I think they're looking into Rachel Talalay, who's, again, fantastic, amazing, super experienced. But Roberto said he'd be willing to look at your cut. And I'm like, shit. And that's, it's like, okay. So Brendan goes home. We sit in the office for hours. There's nothing to do. There's no script. Or there was a script, finally, but no meetings. I go home, and at 8 p.m., Roberto calls me and says, gay. it's like, remember when I told you that if you did a good job? I'm like, yes. He's like, okay, well, you start prepping tomorrow, episode 18, here you go, thank you, good luck, bye.
Wow.
And then by then, I had literally missed half a prep. Like, that was like day four, and then it was like back directing, and then I was really freaking out because the first one, I psychologically prepared for that. It's your first one. Like, you're training for months, right? You're like, push-ups, oh, fuck, I got this. But the 18, I was like, but then I thought, so listen, that's what you wanted, right? You wanted to be a director, and that's what happens. You get calls, last minute, and this is the gig. The gig is like, you didn't know this was coming, you got to deliver every single one. And that turned into also a great episode, that turned into producing director, which I think, as far as the producing directing opportunity, it was a big push from the cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's an assembled cast who really felt that they needed somebody that was there full time, that understood the show, that had the respect of the cast and crew, that had been in the trenches with people. So I did the one, I did the second, and then Roberto called me and he said, listen, I don't want you to plan to AD next year. You're going to be directing more episodes. I'm really happy with your work. I'm always looking to promote people, and you know, I'd rather give it to you to a stranger, somebody that works hard for the show. And then he said, but at the same time, I don't want you just to direct, because then we'll lose you, because you're going to be going other places, and maybe you direct 2 or 3 a year. Mm-hmm. And I think you're valuable to the show. And that led to the conversations like, hey, what if you did this? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah, this is like an opportunity of a lifetime. But it all stemmed from that trust with the showrunner and the cast. And Riverdale has a writer on set for every episode. And those writers are really tight with the showrunner. And there's a relationship I built with the writers too, because oftentimes you end that in the thick of it together. And I think for a showrunner that's so busy as Roberto, he's now three shows going, two pilots in development. You know, he could have five shows going.
Yeah.
And I think that's the turning. When he has people that he trusts, his writers, his cast, and we interacted one-on-one many times, and then he likes my, just like, well, I could give it to an experienced LA producer, director, but why would I?
They don't know the team.
He said, why would I do that? Like, you know the show, you know everybody, I know you, we have our shorthand, you do great work. Warner Brothers is all over me, but nah, like, I want you to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I couldn't be more grateful to him. It doesn't happen that way always. But,
no, for sure. Yeah, it's a rare
But that's
story.
How it happened to me.
So, you know, they knew if they were going to bring you on as a director in season four, just as a director, they'd lose you because you'd be getting other opportunities with other shows, and you were too valuable to the show to lose.
That's how it happened.
Yeah, great. So, what's been some of the biggest challenges taking on that double role? Because, you know, as a director, you've been on, you know, so many sets. You've seen so many directors. And with Riverdale, you knew the cast and crew, you know, very well. But I'm assuming producing was new for you. You were seeing other aspects of production, like post. And you just mentioned watching Shannon's Cut.
I'm going to watch it tonight. I just got it in my inbox. I'm very excited about it.
Shannon's here. I just directed an episode of Riverdale. And so you're now watching other cuts and giving those notes and seeing that new side of the production. Mm-hmm. What was that like? And what have some of the bigger challenges been with that?
I think the biggest challenge for me was I wanted to strike a balance of being useful and supportive of the directors that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, ever, ever want them to feel that there was more than one director per picture, that there was somebody watching over what they're doing or trying to take any creativity away from them or backseating directing or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was a challenge. You know, it's funny because when I got the job, or I got the opportunity, because then I had to go to LA. I had to spend 4 hours at Warner Brothers doing meetings so they could, you know, vet me and this and that and the other, even though Roberto wanted me, you know. And it's funny because everybody was so worried about, their big push was he doesn't have enough experience directing to be the producer director. And we have all these names of these guys that have been producer directors forever, and why don't you consider these people? That's Warner Brothers' take on it. And I understand from a corporate level, I understand why they do that. And that was ironic to me because I've seen a lot of producing directors in other shows.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of producing directors who are great directors, but really don't do much in terms of the producing.
Mm-hmm.
They do their episodes and they just sort of hang out in between. And I thought, I was like, one thing I do know about is production. I'm an AD, like, I know how this thing works. I know what it takes to get the TV show done. Yes, I may not have been in that capacity, but it's not foreign to a first AD, a lot of the problems that come up. There's a production problem. You need a creative solution to overcome a budget problem or a scheduling problem. Well, I've been in those discussions. Maybe even if I didn't sign off, it wasn't my idea, it wasn't my authority, but I sat at those tables. I was listening to those phone calls. It's not like something I never experienced. If I was just a director that didn't come from an AD background, from truly, I went to film school, I did a short, I blew up, now I'm just directing, and you're going to be a producing director, I think there'll be a bigger challenge.
Yeah.
So that aspect, it didn't, I wasn't scared of it. I was prepared. I thought it would be fine. Listen, and it's a show I know. It's a great opportunity. But to me, listen, I'm a new director who's just starting, and I'm going to have to work with veterans sometimes that would come through Riverdale, and I'm going to have to help them and show support and show respect, and they have to respect me. So what's that relationship going to be? when I have to say something, how do you approach something with a veteran director because you think it's for the betterment of the show, right. yet you don't yeah. want to be critical of him or her and, you know, nurture that. That to me was the fear.
Yeah.
Because that to me was the ultimate good job. If you can do that, if you can, listen, I'm not an experienced director. I'm starting in this role, but I'm telling what I'm experiencing. I'm experienced in Riverdale,
yeah.
and I'm experienced in this machine. So I can help you navigate Riverdale so you have the best experience you can have here. Mm-hmm. I can help you with that. And I think they respect that. And, you know, I always approach them in a very respectful manner. And I hope to think, you know, that people like Shannon and others who come to Riverdale, who had a show that had a reputation from being a tough show to work
yeah.
for, both as a crew or directors for scheduling or different reasons or whatever, I hope that we have turned that around so people that have come to us this season can have a good experience and feel like, you know what, it was good. They have a good crew. They supported me. I thought that I had everything I needed to do my best. Mm-hmm. That to me is the ultimate goal as a producing director.
Okay, cool. I'd love to chat a little bit about some of the lessons you've learned
sure.
being on set. One thing I've always been curious about, and other directors that do, you know, that come from a path of, you know, making a short that turns mm-hmm. into a slightly bigger mm-hmm. show and working your way up that way, really don't actually get to experience mm-hmm. other directors on set. Mm-hmm. I hear about other directors from my cast and crew.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so-and-so does it this way, or so-and-so
right.
this. You've spent a lot of your career being able to watch all of these directors. You must see mm-hmm. what works, what mm-hmm. doesn't work.
For sure.
That's a wealth of, you know, knowledge there.
Mm-hmm.
Has that helped you become a better director?
100%.
Yeah.
It's funny, I had that conversation with, we had a director named Chelle Stevens. She's fantastic, Canadian, lives in LA, went through the WB directing workshop, and
yeah.
she, her first ever episodic assignment was with Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
And she had only done, I believe, only done shorts. You know, and we had a lot of conversations, I said, why not? And sometimes, you know, she was a little stressed, and, you know, am I doing this right? Like, I feel like sometimes, you know, she was talking about, sometimes I feel like I want to do an idea, but it's different, but I don't want to fight because these people obviously know the show. Like,
yeah.
trying to strike a balance between when do I put my foot down or when the crew and the DP, they really know what they're doing because this is the show.
Yeah.
So what's the point of fighting back? And we talked a bit about that. And I said, listen, I think you also need to take a deep breath and put a lot less pressure on yourself.
Mm.
And I told her, listen, I know I only, my first episode was last season, and it was successful, but I'm privileged in the sense that I was blessed to have an opportunity to do something that you haven't,
mm-hmm.
which is I was in the set for 10 plus years watching directors make or break
yeah.
and why it worked and why it didn't work. And that's invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see, truly, and pardon my language, when I see shit happens on when it's that, you know, the final hours, the like, you're not going to make or
yeah.
whatever it is, or somebody doesn't want to do something. Like, I've seen how people navigate through that, you know, when it worked, when it didn't work. And so when it happened to me, I didn't even know I had those skills. But somewhere in the back of my brain, it just sort of survival mode kicks in and it takes over and you just sort of know what you have to do just to push it through the finish
yeah.
line. So it's unfair to have the comparison with somebody that wasn't crew for so long. She said, take a deep breath. And said, that's what we're here for. If you stress, lean on us.
Mm-hmm.
Tell your feeling. But yeah, you're not gonna, nobody is gonna expect somebody that came from that different route to be able to open your toolbox and come out with this, like, oh, let's French reverse this and boom, boom, boom. And like, that's not, you know, they have the creative brain, but they haven't observe the machine mm-hmm. for that long. So you help them with that, right? Yeah. Okay, so we want to give you your creative freedom. We're going to nurture that. But let me help you navigate through the machine.
Yeah.
This is how the machine is going to work.
And for you as a director, you're like, okay, I've seen this attempted before. That didn't
yes.
work.
To me as a director, I knew it was all like survival. And it, again, it's a fine line too, right? Because the trap,
yeah.
the trap, and that happens to ADs turned directors. The trap is also that you become too much the other thing, that you're just so pragmatic about making your days
mm-hmm.
because it's all about finishing on time.
Yeah.
That that bottom line, that episode needs to be great.
Yeah.
Right? The showrunners are not looking at you. Would you? You know, they're looking at that. Cut.
Yep.
So how do you, am I creative enough? Am I pushing the boundaries and whatnot? But I'm not going to allow myself to spend time, my time, on stuff that I've watched year after year after year people failed on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balance.
Yep.
But that's, I think it's really valuable.
That's a very good point. Leads me on to the next question. What advice would you give to other ADs or crew members who are looking to make that move into directing?
I think there's a few things. I think the first thing is you gotta shut off the part of your brain that was doing the different job. So if you're an AD, you gotta trust the AD, don't even think about the schedule, this and that. You just sort of focus on your task. That job is huge, directing is huge. Just focus on that,
mm-hmm.
focus on that all the time. If you're, Shannon was camera operator or mm-hmm. some are DP, some come from cast. Whatever you're doing before, if you're going to be clinging to control of that, I think it's going to be taking you away from having the global vision that is required to deliver
yeah.
that show.
Yeah.
I think that would be one advice I would give. And the second one, I've seen this time and time again, because I was also lucky to have seen first-time directors who were in my shoes before, like in the same shoes before I had the opportunity to do mine, and how it went for them.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I see all the time, and this would be my advice, there's a lot of first-time directors, your crew, you've been fighting for this opportunity for so long, you've been waiting, you've been waiting, you've been waiting, and then you have it,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you find this need to impress people by making the most amazing episode ever done, and you're going to make the camera move that nobody's seen before, and your idea is going to be the greatest idea, and your pitch is going to be the best pitch, that you're going to blow their minds off. And I think that's a very tricky, you know, mentality,
mm-hmm.
and it could be a trap, because you sometimes, I think, you lose sight of the substance, you lose sight of the story and story points, because all you're obsessing about is how is this going to be so amazing
mm-hmm.
that they will look at that in the cut and be like, oh my God, we must have that person back.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that hire you, they ultimately, they're writers,
mm-hmm.
right? For them, story comes first. So sure, you may have the most beautiful shot ever designed in the history of cinema, but if the performance is not there, if the story beat is not delivered, that's what they're looking for. So I would say story first, always, always, story first. Who cares if that shot was done before? Who cares if it's not on Warner? Who cares if it's not on the crane? Story first. If the story calls for a crane, let's have a crane.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't call for it, if it calls for master over, baby, moving on. Focus on story. Don't get bogged down in trying to impress people. I think you impress people by the way you behave on set,
mm-hmm.
if you're prepared, by what you get out of your crew, by being that leader, pushing people forward in a good way, by the performances you get from your cast. All those people report back to
yep.
your showrunner, right? They all know how you went on, like how we went on set. And also, my mindset was, Riverdale gave me an opportunity to direct. So I have a path to choose. I can get that episode and I can think, how can I make this episode so amazing for my reel so I can go and shop around everywhere
mm-hmm.
so I can get another episode and show to people, oh my God, that's wow, that camera move or that fight sequence, that stunt. Or I could just make the best episode that Roberto wants and he will call me back. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what's easier, to get called back from Riverdale or to try to make something so outlandish that it's going to be a reel, but then Roberto doesn't like it, and then he doesn't call me back.
Yeah.
So I, from the get-go, said, listen, I'm not here to impress anybody,
but him.
But him, in a way that story comes first and says, great job, come on back.
Yeah, well, those other shows and showrunners, they'll watch those cuts as well, but it's Roberto, they'll call, right?
And the first thing they'll say is that, why wasn't that person invited back?
Mm-hmm.
It's recurring business. Sometimes you
Absolutely.
Do one episode and you come back for whatever reason, it's not available, doesn't like the show. But it's the first thing they check.
Yeah.
That person did an episode. Why weren't they invited back?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's great advice for directing. And to sort of sum up what you said earlier, correct me if I'm wrong, to even be offered the opportunity to move into directing, you would say that it is about communicating your intentions to the production,
mm-hmm.
but never letting that take away from the job you've got, being awesome and kick-ass at the job. If you're
100%.
ADing, if you're a camera operator, whatever it is, your dream and goal to direct does not take away from the job you perform.
I think 100%.
Yeah.
And the one thing I would say too about advice,
mm-hmm.
I also think that there are a lot of TV directors in general, and maybe especially the ones coming from crew, are afraid to direct the cast.
Yes. Yeah, working
right?
with actors is a huge thing.
It's they know what they're doing, and they don't want to be directed, and why not? And I can tell you, the only reason I'm here, yes, Roberto gave me this opportunity, but it was the way that I worked with the cast.
Mm-hmm.
I earned their trust as an AD, but I knew that trust could be lost like that when
mm-hmm.
I stepped onto direct and I wasn't prepared or gave some terrible piece of direction
mm-hmm.
or result direction or a line read or whatever it was. So yes, I had the trust, but you have to build on that and take it to the next level. And after I did that first episode, they were bombarding Roberto that they loved working with
mm-hmm.
me as a director. And it's because I was directing them. And by that, I mean, again, it's not like I have to have this playbook. I'm going to give them the most mind-blowing direction they ever heard. What I mean by that is that when you're filming, like when the show's air is an audience of millions, when you're filming is an audience of one, you are the only person they're performing to.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody else watching them. Right? Everybody else is doing a million things. When that camera's rolling, you're watching them. And I think they need to know that you're watching,
mm-hmm.
that you're not going to move on if it's not good, that you're going to protect them. So even if the direction is leaning on something that they did that it's great, that you like it, and you go in and you whisper in their ear, hey, you did this thing. It was great, but don't rush that beat. Like,
mm-hmm.
lean on that or whatever it is. It's not like you need to impress them, but no, let it be known that you're watching.
You're there for them.
That you're there for them, that your sole focus is on them, that you're not going to compromise on their performance,
yeah.
that you're not going to let all the bells and whistles take it away from their time.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that in TV is glossed over a
Absolutely,
lot of times.
Yeah.
And so I say connect with your cast.
Yeah, that's so important. You call cut on set and just the noise and the million things that happen, and often you see cast forgotten
mm-hmm.
in that. So it's a great piece of advice. What's next for you? You're producing, directing season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hoping to continue in that role, or to kind of keep directing episodic, or work on your own projects again now that you've got this
mm-hmm.
on your behind your belt?
I would love to work on my own stuff as well. I think I'm obviously on Riverdale for a little bit of the long run.
Mm-hmm.
If should they want me to come back, which I hope they will.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be there for probably at least the next couple of seasons if Riverdale keeps coming back, and if Roberto wants me there, that's sort of the agreement that we need. Yeah. It's a 3-year assignment, which I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
You know, part of the life of a TV director that's really tough is that you're traveling and you have these crash courses into how different crews operate and different casts and whatnot. That's really challenging. I feel fortunate that I'm with the same family. I have the shorthand with everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm at a point now where I'm not having the other aspect of it, which is a good thing. Where you're diversifying your skills and whatnot. Yes, I'm for the moment just doing Riverdale. There's part of that is maybe not that enticing for some people, but I do like the idea of being part of the family, being mm-hmm. part of the legacy, being there day to day, being somebody that when it's your turn to direct, it's like, Gabe's back, or you know, there's that tight bond.
Absolutely.
With the same show, and I like that.
Yeah.
So that makes me want, I will stay, but also makes me very happy staying there. I think it gives me stability and the opportunity in the hiatus to, I don't have to jump on other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 10-month run. It's stable. It's good money. I can, you know, kids will be taken care of.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very expensive city, so you can relax. And then, the hiatus maybe will be focused to doing your own thing. Whether that's another episode of TV, not because of the money or not because of a reel, but maybe because it resonates with you in a
mm-hmm.
different way, or is it, I don't mind doing another short film or a feature film, or maybe there's a hit that you don't do anything, maybe just develop a story from scratch with a writer, and maybe in two hiatuses from when you started your director. So I think in an ideal world, I would love to see Riverdale through
mm-hmm.
at least for a couple more years. And Roberto has a lot of things going, so I'm sure that even within that camp, other things may come my way.
Connections and relationships.
For sure. And also, you know, who doesn't like feature films? So there'll be a best of both worlds.
Awesome, Gabe. Thank you so much
you for
being here. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.